Hello, Meg Linehan here, and you are listening to the first episode of our special Olympics edition of Full Time with Meg Linehan. Today, Deputy Managing Editor of our soccer vertical, Brooks Peck, joins me to preview the tournament and our coverage at The Athletic. But before we get into it, you can subscribe to The Athletic for all of our women's soccer coverage and beyond, but we're all in on the Olympics, obviously. Plus, we've got the NWSL, the appeal for the equal pay fight is incoming soon, all the other sports we cover. There's always a deal for you at theathletic.com/fulltime. All right, here's Brooks. All right, Brooks, let's start with the fact that these Olympics are actually happening at all, because it feels like we're getting like a new story about COVID-19 every 2 to 3 hours at this point. I mean, between Coco Gauff and Katie Lou Samuelson, we're just starting to hit some sort of, I don't want to say critical mass, because I don't think anything is going to stop this Olympics, but it's feeling less and less great by the hour at this point.
It already didn't feel great to start with, so that's saying something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's just a rough way to even just go into the opening ceremonies. It just doesn't feel enjoyable.
It's just, I mean, I think we always knew that this tournament was going to have, you know, not the tournament even, the Olympics were going to happen. There's too much money behind it. There's too much everything behind it between television, sponsorship, all of this stuff is happening. And it just feels like we're on this inevitable, okay, everyone's going to get there. As a lot of people have pointed out, we've learned a lot how to do sports, maybe more successfully than whatever is happening right now, where we've got everyone coming into the country with various levels of readiness for this environment. And it's just, I think that a lot of us are kind of still wrapping our heads around, like, is this even going to be fun or entertaining to watch, knowing what is happening in Japan right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think we went through all of these domestic league bubble tournaments and events, like Challenge Cup with NWSL and the NBA bubble and WNBA bubble and all these things, where we kind of like got used to that and it kind of worked, and we're like, okay, we can do this, but this is just a whole different entity. Bringing in people from all over the world and having all these different athletes, and they're all living together, and it's just a tough situation.
Right. All right. So, you know, that said, we will think about these games. Obviously, the U.S. Women's National Team has been over there a while. They've been training over there. They are now actually in the proper site for where they're kicking off their tournament in Tokyo against Sweden. But first, like, overall expectations, as someone who is maybe not as finely attuned to the world of women's soccer and the U.S. Women's National Team as perhaps I am, just from your point of view, what are your expectations of this Olympic tournament with these 12 teams?
Overall, I just think back to 2016, where, you know, I feel like the U.S. went into that kind of confident and, again, in a good space, and you think that they're okay, they're going to just roll to gold, and it didn't happen. So I keep checking my expectations against that previous experience. But also, like we just said, given all the circumstances of this particular Olympics, it's really tough to predict the future like that, because you never know who's going to test positive for COVID, or which team's going to be sidetracked with different situations or quarantined or whatever.
Right.
So it's just really tough to get into a mode of like predicting who's going to do what, you know?
Right. I mean, I think about even, you know, Australia's had a really tough run up into this tournament. New Zealand has not really seen each other as a team for 16 months. And like, you're dealing with that at the same time as obviously we're watching the U.S. Women's National Team. We've had all of this buildup, but even, you know, I keep going back to that first game against the Netherlands after the pandemic shut down, and everyone being like, well, why are we having expectations? They haven't been playing together. And then they roll to this what felt like a very easy 2-0 win over the Netherlands. And we were like, oh, so should we be concerned about that? Maybe we should. Okay. And there's always expectations.
Yeah.
with the U.S. women's national team, there's always, I mean, obviously Vlatko Andonovski came in thinking he was going to get an Olympics immediately off the bat and part of his tenure. And then, you know, everybody gets to wait a year, including him. But, you know, I think that there has been some silver linings for the U.S. women's national team in a way that there maybe hasn't been for other national teams, where you get a couple key players actually back and into fitness and ready to go, even as they have lost others to injury. So it's going to be, I just feel like the vibe of this Olympics is just going to be weird and not necessarily always in a good way.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be tough to take away, to have too many takeaways from this tournament, depending on how it plays out, with all these different factors. So it's just going to be this strange thing that exists in this specific time, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. And the other part of this, too, that I want to talk to you about is just, you know, we just did this roundtable with Katie Wyatt, and one of the things that she brought up with me and Steph Young was, you know, can we get growth out of this tournament? And this is going to be a really interesting challenge. Like, yes, there are certainly pros to the Olympics because a lot of people watch the Olympics, but there's also obviously more competition for that attention, right? It's not just women's soccer, it's swimming, it's gymnastics, it's all of these other things that suck up a lot of attention. Plus, you add in the weirdness of this tournament, you add in the time zones here in the US, and it feels like this is not necessarily going to be the breakout moment that 2019 was. Even, you know, 2016, I think, broke through simply because the US women's national team did something that they don't usually do, which is lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, like, the time zones were favorable in Brazil, and it all kind of worked a little better. But, you know, you said competition with other sports, but you can also look at it as other sports potentially drawing in new eyeballs to the women's soccer competition. So it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is kind of the vibe of months and months of lead up into this, where, you know, I think a lot of us were kind of going like, okay, there's only so many times we can talk about this roster process, right? There's only so many times we can talk about what this team is going to look like until we actually get there and actually see it happen. So on that note, we're opening up this tournament for the U.S. Women's National Team against Sweden. Obviously, a lot of jokes about that matchup. Sweden is a very, very, very familiar opponent. It also gives us the immediate narrative of this is the team that dumped the national team out of the 2016 Olympics, though obviously they played each other in the 2019 World Cup, went a very different direction. But I mean, I spent a lot of time in mixed zones in France being surrounded by Swedish people being like, what about our rivalry?
Well, that's my
question. Are you afraid of Sweden?
That's my question for you. Do you see it as a rivalry at this point?
So what's funny is Steph and I just kind of wrote this entire big story about rivalries. And Sweden, I think, is kind of the closest we've truly gotten, right? Brandi Chastain and I had a phone call, and I was talking to her about a couple of stories. And the way that she talked about rivalries, I think, was really helpful for how I even frame some of these teams that we have had attempted rivalries with, right? Like, Brazil has, I think, kind of been the closest in this, what I consider the modern era of the national team. Mm-hmm. But Sweden, over the past 5 years, has gotten a couple really good results, right? And they play them in a very frustrating manner. I mean, we don't need to, like... go through the whole post-game comments of 2016, but like, they clearly get under the national team's skin with the way that they play. And I think that's honestly a good thing. And we've also seen a really good result from Sweden against the US in April. Like, this 1-1 draw, US did not look very good. Sweden looked like tactically they knew how to frustrate the hell out of the US national team. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a good thing. Do I think that they are actually rivalry? Brandi called rivalry something that, you know, you're getting kind of this extra fire to a game that you wouldn't get against other opponents. It goes beyond respect, and it goes into gut punch territory.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Sweden is right in gut punch territory. Like, they just can't quite, you know, like, get the dagger in for a lot of these games. But Sweden is definitely the closest I think we get to a team that really, really frustrates the U.S. national team. And I think that that's fun to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, there have been these ebbs and flows where teams kind of come and go as, like, looking like they will be the long-term rival. But it, you know, obviously Canada was in there, and briefly, as was mentioned in that roundtable you referenced, briefly it looked like England might rise to that occasion.
Right.
You know, I think China early days. But yeah, there isn't one kind of sustained, okay, this is the ultimate rival. But you're right. Sweden occupies this interesting space where they just kind of get under the US's yeah. skin, and they do it pretty consistently. So it's a cool dynamic.
I think the really important thing about rivalries in the US women's national team is that because of international football, it's not like NWSL where you're getting three Portland OL ring games a season, right? And they get chances to look at each other and like very familiar with each other and actually like start to get some of these narratives built around them, right? Like there was a lot of USA Norway in the early days with the rivalry, and Norway actually, like, I mean, I broke down the numbers from 91 to 99. Norway won more games over the US women's national team in that time span. Like that was a legitimate rivalry, and one that really had some heat behind it. And Sweden has not, you know, that's the whole point of that story that Steph and I wrote. Like, no team has ever quite hit those heights again. But I do think that there is something really interesting to Sweden simply because they are, I mean, the fact that everybody was like, when we get the assignments for the Olympics, Sweden is going to be in our, we know Sweden is going to be in our group. And that familiarity, I think, helps get that frustration going and get that relationship going, where it's just like you see each other a lot. And thus you start to pick up on that, the stuff that like drives you crazy about other teams. And Sweden, I think, has had one of the best tactical reads, whether it's Jill Ellis's edition of this team or even Vlatko Andonovski. I mean, they've managed to score goals against Vlatko Andonovski's US women's national team, which is not a very common occurrence
over the past couple of years. That's a big deal. Yeah.
So, all right. Any other games that you're looking forward to? Obviously, you know, we're kicking off very early on Wednesday morning with Team GB at 3:30 in the morning. But is there any other game on that opening list of games that you're looking at and going, I think I'll wake up early for that one too?
I am curious to see how Team GB does. Obviously, it's a very England-heavy squad, and they all have played together a lot. But just the whole concept of a Team GB, whenever it arises, is interesting to me because it's just so unusual. And you only get it in these rare little instances. And to see how the players deal with that is interesting to me. So I'll be watching that.
Yeah, I think the other one from that opening game, unfortunately it's later in the morning, but Australia versus New Zealand, I think, is going to be a really interesting one because as we said kind of earlier in this show, like, these are two teams that have not had easy lead-ins. Also, it's the fun of, you know, we've got a couple World Cup hosts for 2023 facing off, which is a weird weird dynamic for an opening group stage match. But also, these are two teams, again, if we want to talk about rivalries, like, this is one that has some real history, some real familiarity.
For sure.
And I think will be a really fun opening day.
Yeah, and it'll be important for Australia in particular to really get off to a good start, given their recent history and expectations and how things haven't quite worked out for them. So that'll be interesting too.
Yeah, also the subplot of two former U.S. Women's National Team coaches, either assistant coach for Australia, former head coach for New Zealand, facing off against each other. So, like, are the group that story the U.S. is in is just, lines. I know, it's just like a lot of stuff happening all at the same time.
Yes.
All right. I did want to revisit a couple of our other previous stories, that ones that you've worked on, ones that we've worked on together, but, you know, Christy Mewis is obviously one of the big stories on the U.S. Women's National Team. And since, you know, we have, I think, founded the Christy Mewis fan club, a lot has happened since the Challenge Cup.
A lot.
And so I wanted to check in on your Christy Mewis feelings.
I just think, like, it's just the ever-continuing year of Christy Mewis. It just keeps going and going and going and extending. And this is just, I think, a part of it. You know, obviously, a really cool situation for her to be in the Olympics with her sister. It's just all good stuff. They have a beer.
I will say that
it's great.
Yeah, they have a bear. The content from the Mua sisters, it's just like, I feel like adding sisters into any team where they just have like their own weird vibe that surrounds them, like, it's a very interesting dynamic to watch.
This is what I'm going to be watching because, you know, obviously right now they just got to Japan and the tournament hasn't started. It's all great. And isn't it great that we're on this team together? But whenever you have siblings who are like together for a very long period of time, that dynamic can like kind of fray at times. So I'm curious to see where this goes and how the Instagram content goes throughout the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, as an only child, I cannot speak to that. So, although I probably Steph and I are about as close as we could probably get to having that sort of sibling energy, where it's just
even if you really get along, being in quarantine with a sibling can go some weird places. So, let's see how that works out.
All right, moving on to Becky Sauerbrunn, our captain. There was a fantastic video from the U.S. Women's National Team account where she is closing in on the record of most caps with the U.S. National Team without a goal. She's about to eclipse Kate Markgraf, who had previously set the record. I mean, it's going to happen in this tournament. Did you watch that? To me, that summed up, you know, we wrote this whole article about like why Becky Sauerbrunn is the perfect captain. And that video,
it was the perfect summary of all of it. It really was, because, you know, it shows her humor and it shows just her whole personality. So it was really cool. I do hope that if she does score, that it's not like the fifth goal in a blowout or something. I hope it's like, you know, the gold medal match. 90th minute, she rises up on a set piece and just knocks it in.
I mean, so when we were in Connecticut and they had started that little set piece for Becky, I just about lost my mind in the press booth. Because, like, if she had a game-winning goal in the Olympics, obviously I would be losing my mind. But, like, it has been a very long-standing dream that I actually happen to be at the national team game. Yeah, that I want to witness it in my own eyes. But I also want it to be at a game where we actually have mixed zones again, because I want the experience of Becky Sauerbrunn in that mixed zone talking about scoring a goal. Like, that is my... That's the ideal conditions. Obviously, we'll take it however it happens, much like Becky Sauerbrunn is like, it's got to happen the right way, right? Like, no penalty kicks, no.
Yeah.
Don't set me. I want to do it myself if I'm going to do it. So.
But speaking of that video, can we just say, like, I think the U.S. national team video content has been really on point recently. Just going back to the Mua sisters, the Who Knows Sam Mua's Best series was fantastic set up for this tournament. So yeah, they've been on point, and hopefully that continues throughout their time.
Yeah. Between that, the Mewis series, which, oh, Christy, like complete underwhelming performance, but also Abby Dahlkemper being mic'd up, I thought was pretty great.
That was great.
The Becky video was pretty great. And then also I really enjoyed on Monday, the team also put out this kind of like, let's look back at the 2012 U20 championship winning team with Sam Mewis, Crystal Dunn, and Julie Ertz. And those three looking at their headshots from 2012 and being forced to rewatch a video of them as basically tiny little babies was just deeply,
that was really
enjoyable
good
to me.
Yeah. Really, really good stuff.
All right. Finally, you know, we're kind of infamous for our kit reviews at The Athletic, and there are a couple. Obviously, we've got the opening ceremony coming up, and if this is about as close as we're going to get to kind of a kit review for the Olympics, since everyone gets kind of the boring Olympic editions of their jerseys. But both, you know, we have sent some links back and forth about Team USA's opening look, where we have tried to make sense of the Ralph Lauren approach to fashion, where they look like they're on sailboats.
It's yacht club. It's like, you can really tell that old Ralphie there watched 80s teen movies and really identified with the villains in all of them. Like, I think that's the vibe that he's going for with this collection. Like, he watched the jocks in those movies. Like, okay, they're great. I'm gonna go for that and just use that in 2021.
There's so many layers.
And it's
also, it's
layers.
Ungodly hot.
Yeah.
It's, like, that's what I don't get, is it's so hot. I think I saw an article, too, that they were they're putting like personal fans in the jackets so that way the athletes are cool. And I'm like, or you could put them in t-shirts.
Yeah, just don't wear the jacket. If you need a personal fan for a jacket, it's defeated the point of a jacket.
Yeah, but just, you know, like shirt with a collar, vest with a lot of pockets. Like they need a lot of storage at the opening ceremonies. I don't know for what. I mean, any number of things, I guess. But yeah, it was just a real look. And meanwhile, at the other end of the spectrum, we have Canada.
Yes.
Taken a very different approach.
Canada has gone for, I believe it's like a early Avril Lavigne tribute look.
It's the Robin Sparkles, Let's Go to the Mall.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
It's the denim and the graffiti. And it's, I don't know where they got this from, but it's pretty amazing that they just said yes to this. Let's take this to Japan.
Yeah. And also, Steph really wanted us to make sure that we mentioned the bucket hats, because I also, you know, I'd made this joke earlier. We suffer through bucket hats already in my lifetime. I do not know.
Well, this is kind
understand
of
why.
The summer of bucket hats, because we also had that at the Euros on the men's soccer side, in, you know, having so much of that tournament in England and in London and the UK. The bucket hat is kind of the look over there for big summer tournaments. So it's continuing for Olympics, and it's interesting.
Yeah. I will say, if you don't follow any of the Canadian women's national team, I highly recommend it, because they are loving the outfits. There's a lot of photos happening like in the hotel while they're trapped in the hotel featuring these looks. Christine Sinclair frequently appears in them as well. She is not a poster herself, but she will appear in other people's posts. And that is, you have not lived until you've seen Christine Sinclair in this denim jacket striking a pose. So highly, highly, I cannot wait to watch the opening ceremony and witness this giant, like, march of
graffiti denim.
Canadian tuxedo. Happen. It's just going to be truly, truly absurd.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
On that note, let's briefly hit on what folks can probably expect from us at The Athletic, assuming Steph and I survive trashing our sleep schedules over the next 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So no promises on surviving that, but
yeah,
we have some amazing things planned. You know, this is our first kind of big global event where we can combine the forces of you and Steph and Katie on a lot of different things. And I think we have some cool plans there, as the roundtable shows, that I think people will be able to read once this comes out. But in addition to that, we'll have some great podcast offerings, obviously with Full Time. But then on the UK side, the Offside Rule podcast is doing a full series in the tournament on every match day with some special guests who your listeners might be familiar with. We'll also have some special written content from some different folks that you might not expect. And yeah, it's just a whole lot of fun stuff. So we have some cool stuff planned.
And then on top of that, obviously the NWSL is still going. And my personal favorite, the return of legal documents, probably on Friday nights.
Yes, Meg, you will be in Pacer. You will be on midnight conference calls from Japan. So it's going to be a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. All right, Brooks, thank you for joining for our first edition of our Olympic podcast. I super appreciate it. And now it's probably time for me to take a nap.
Yes, we all need a nap.
The tournament kicks off tomorrow, and here's how you can watch the games in the United States. Now, every single time I'm listing here will be an Eastern time, just so you know now, but also so I don't have to say it every single time. For the U.S. Women's National Team game against Sweden, it's live on USA at 4:30 a.m. Then it will also air on delay at 8:30 a.m. if you don't want to wake up super early like me, and 6 p.m. on NBCSN. The match can also be streamed on NBCOlympics.com. It will also air on Telemundo and the Telemundo Deportes app in the U.S. The opening day of the tournament also has the best TV coverage of the group stage here in the United States. We've got Team GB versus Chile kicking us off at 3:30 a.m. on the Olympic Channel. then China versus Brazil at 4 a.m. on NBCSN. Then at 6:30 a.m., it's Japan versus Canada on NBCSN. At 7 a.m., Zambia versus the Netherlands. That one is on the Olympic Channel. And finally, we've got that 2023 World Cup host versus 2023 World Cup host in Australia versus New Zealand on USA at 7:30 a.m. Thanks for tuning in to our Olympic coverage here at Full Time with Meg Linehan, and thank you again to Brooks for his time. One quick reminder, we will be dropping preview episodes before every single match day, and then we've got longer shows coming after the games every single match day. So subscribe to Full Time now on your podcast platform of choice so you get them as soon as we publish them. You can also follow all of our Olympic coverage at The Athletic. There are links to key articles in the tag in our show notes today. You can also, again, support our women's soccer coverage by subscribing at theathletic.com/fulltime. Full Time does not exist without the work and support of senior podcast producer Michael Zimmerman. And Meg, thank you for listening, and I will be back with you tomorrow.